This episode of The Payload is brought to you in partnership with Legion by Lenovo and Intel. Find out more about Legion by Lenovo on Facebook and Twitter at Legion by Lenovo.
The podcast for heroes in the world of Overwatch. This is The Payload.
Hey everybody, welcome to episode number 53 of The Payload. We are an Overwatch podcast from blizzpro.com. Today is January 20th? Is it? 19th, 2017 from 19th. Denver.
We're almost there.
19th, almost there. 20th is tomorrow. Don't worry, we won't talk about that on the show. From Denver, Colorado, I am John Horstman, and we've got a special guest with us this week. I've been binge watching his YouTube videos for like the past 2.5 weeks. I think I've hit every one at this point. Incredible content creator for Overwatch, has his own stream, everything else. We're incredibly excited to welcome to the show Skyline. Hey man, how you doing? Welcome to the show.
Hey, I'm doing well. That's a lot of hours to watch all my videos, but that's great. I'm glad you enjoy them so much.
He locked himself in his room for a week straight.
And just watched all of them.
My mom grounded me, actually, is what happened. Honestly, man, I'm not just saying this because you're on the show and in front of me right now, but I'm not a YouTube guy. I'm not a sit down and watch YouTube YouTube videos, but when somebody posted on the Reddit sub or the Overwatch subreddit about your channel, I checked it out. I'm like, every single one of these videos are pure gold. They're pure gold. So I just started watching all of them. And then I'm like, well, I've learned more here than having Kevin on this show for 50 episodes. So clearly I need to ask him to come on. And so it's awesome to have you here. We're ready for you to school us in some Overwatch knowledge this week.
Well, I'm really happy to hear that. I'm glad to hear whenever someone says that my stuff helped them out.
Yeah, it's going to be awesome. We do have an incredible show. We've got a lot to talk about, so we're going to skate on through here from Camarillo, California. It's Jimmy Bloxham. Hey, Jimmy, welcome back.
Always good to be on The Payload. One of the highlights of my week, for sure. Always love talking about Overwatch, and having Skyline on here is freaking awesome.
Yeah, it's gonna be
I really love your videos, by the way, too.
All right, we're just fanboying a little bit.
Yeah, pretty much.
That we'll get that out of the way so we can have a real show for the rest of it. And last but not least, from Huntington Fieldsville in Westchesterton Fieldsville in California, it's Raj. Hey Raj.
Yeah, from somewhere out there in California. Hey guys, it's been a good week. I'm excited to be here. It felt like, since we did the show on Friday last week, it just felt like it was a lot longer than it should have been. I feel like it should have felt like we were doing the podcast today, like super fast, but it just seemed like it was a lot longer. So I missed you guys, I guess is what I'm trying to say. Even though you never get my location in California, right? That's fine. Your videos were all right. I'm not gonna fanboy like everybody else. I'm kidding. They were good.
I can mute her. I can make her voice deeper for the rest of the podcast.
No, the videos are good. I actually the video that we're really gonna talk about today, which we'll get in later. Now that I've seen that video, when I watch streams, I can't stop looking at the things that you pointed out. So it's like I'm constantly just thinking about the videos, and it's crazy how I never noticed it before, but we'll get in that part later. But I'm excited to be here. I'm ready for the show. We have a lot to talk about. I'm ready to get into it.
Yeah, let's do that. Before we do, though, every week we talk about what we've been up to in the Overwatch land. So let's go ahead and do that. Skyline, I'm going to bring it to you first. What have you been up to in Overwatch? Have you been grinding out that Grandmaster. What are you up to?
I'm just focusing on my channel and my stream right now. I did a run. I actually hit top 500 a few days, maybe a week ago or so.
Wow.
For the second time, I was that nice. Season one. I didn't really play in season two. And I was really surprised because for me, I was just focusing on the stream, just having fun, reading the chat. I look up, you know, maybe three streams later and oh, suddenly I'm up there. So I wasn't expecting to actually get that high, but ever since then, I've just been really letting, like, not really playing ranked that much. Or when I do play ranked, I'm just messing around.
Yeah.
And focusing on my stuff.
Once you're top 500, I mean, that's the dream right there. That's can't go much higher unless you're going to grind out that number one with, what's his, the guy from Tempo Storm who does it every...
Mangachu?
Yep, Mangachu. Thank you. I wanted to say Mendo. That's not what we're talking about here. So awesome. Well, congrats on 500, top 500. That's an amazing achievement. And congrats on your channel too, because being able to just make awesome content is really fun.
Thank you.
Last but not least, nope, not last, second. Let's jump over. Rosh, what have you been up to? I know you've been streaming a lot. Sounds like you finished your placements on your main.
Yeah, I did. I was messing around on a Smurf a little bit just because this meta is not fun to play in at all. And I'm so tired. So I've just been kind of messing around on a Smurf just so I can stream with, just have fun, you know, just have fun with it. Not worry about winning or losing, not worrying about win streaks, not worrying about meta. I'll play whatever you want me to play. Just tell me. But I finally finished the placements on my main, and for argument's sake, to just test it out, I really wanted to go 0-10 on the placements and just see what I would place, because, you know, the whole placements were skewed with last season and how they tried to fix it to where they would replace you, and how the ELO, everybody's screaming that it's broken. So I wanted to test that out and I wanted to go 0-10. Unfortunately, I couldn't quite go 0-10. I went 2-8. And the two matches that I won were just because I keyed with my friend Hi and my friend Navi on accident. We kind of just got together and it was just like, it would have been impossible to lose. So it's kind of just, we kind of just destroyed the match, and I went 2-8. I placed 36-15, I think, still going 2-8, which is kind of ridiculous that I should wow. ever place that high, but it was fun. Now I have my main done with placements, and so now I'm actually going to put in work so we can get it up to 4K, but I was just blown away by the fact that I still placed at 36-15. That was kind of insane to me.
Yeah, that's so insane. That's only 2,000 higher than me. I'm just kidding. I'm not that low. Jimmy, what about you, man? What have you been up to in Overwatch this week? Did you place up in Masters as well?
Oh, yeah. Especially after watching Skyline's video about hitting top 500. Although that actually has a really good message in it, and I want you to check it out if you haven't yet. No, you're not going to hit probably top 500, but definitely check it out. There's a really good tip on enjoying Overwatch in that. And after watching that video, I went and played competitive and had fun. And won. So I was really happy with that. Nice. Instead of getting extremely salty, which I usually do because of how low my rating is right now. you can look at past episodes if you want to see how bad I am, but I'm trying to improve, and obviously Skyline's videos are going to help me there.
You know, once you start podcasting and creating YouTube videos, and I know you do Heroes as well, you're casting for Blizzard, you get a little bit of an excuse to be like, I can either be the top 500 guy, or I can spend hours and hours each week studying up and creating great content. So that's the excuse I'm going with. And you should too, Jimmy. But Rosh, keep playing there. You just keep on going. All right. Well, that's going to do it kind of for our weeks in review. Let's jump up. We've got a little interview with Skyline we want to do before we get rolling with the show. All right. So, we've got Skyline on the show, in case you did not know that already. for those who are unfamiliar, we have a lot of people who play Overwatch and the only content they really get to consume is audio podcasts and things like that. So Skyline, for people who maybe aren't familiar with you or your channel and what you're doing, who are you?
I'm a guy. I'm a guy who made a YouTube channel. I probably my number one hobby for my entire life has been competitive games, video games in general, like taking them seriously. Ever since I was about 12, you know, the first game that my father was actually a gamer back like in the when it was strange to be a gamer, you know, in the early 90s and 80s. And he like let me play StarCraft and Warcraft 2. And so I was playing those games from a very young age. And then eventually I played them online. And so now it's today after all of that time. And I thought that because I always looked up to a lot of YouTubers from old time, even Warcraft 3, old like Dota 1, you know, Day 9 is probably one of the more familiar ones from StarCraft 2. I just like as a kid, that was what I watched. I didn't really watch TV or anything like that. I watched that stuff. So people like Day 9 from StarCraft specifically were like who I looked up to. And so now that's kind of what I wanted to be. So I figured, hey, I'll try it out. So I made my YouTube channel in that, you know, being an analyst, trying to help people out.
Awesome. Awesome. So how long have you had your YouTube channel? Did you start it with Overwatch or did you make content before?
This Overwatch channel is October I made it. So okay. I'd say that's what, 1, 2, 3, almost 3 months at this point. I had a YouTube, I did actually make YouTube videos before for a game called Heroes of New Earth that I was very good at. Yeah. And I only had that channel for about a month. I got that up to about, I don't know, a few thousand subscribers, but I quit. And that was many years ago. So there's like literally no carryover. The only thing that carried over is my experience from having already made a YouTube channel. I had some knowledge about, okay, this is kind of what I can expect. This is the sort of skills I need. But that's pretty much it.
Wow. So I did not know that your channel was actually that new. I have to nerd out 32,000 subscribers. That's amazing. Congratulations on that in just a few months. And the content's so good and you put out videos so regularly. So kudos. That's really difficult to do. I know one of the things that I think really distinguishes your channel, besides the fact that your videos can be really, they have really funny, witty moments in them that always crack me up, like your top 500 video. How do you kind of come up with your different kind of topics? Is it just like you wake up one morning and be like, I want to do something like this? Are you just a creative genius? How does that work?
I'm not a genius, that's for sure. some of the topics, because I had played Overwatch for season one before I actually made the YouTube channel. So going to the YouTube channel, I already had some videos in mind that had built up over my time playing, but really not that many, to be honest. A lot of my videos come from a lot of them come from watching. Originally, there's a content creator called The War Owl from Counter-Strike. I really enjoy him. He's pretty much the same style as my channel, or like, you know, Day Night for StarCraft, that sort of style, where he's an educational channel for Counter-Strike, and that's not FPS. So I use a lot of videos that he does for Counter-Strike and say, hey, that's a cool concept. How can I bring that over to Overwatch? I also, sometimes I'll just watch other Overwatch channels, like I'll watch your Overwatch or, you know, Stylosa, all the big ones.
Yeah.
And I'll take a topic that they did and I'll say, huh, well, that's actually an interesting topic. Let's see what different stuff we can explore there. With the key thing being, even if it's the same topic or a topic that's been gone over before, I try to always be different, not for the sake of being different, just because there are lots of things that people that you lots of different perspectives that I think a lot of times the community sort of is very narrow-minded, where the first person to say something and get a lot of upvotes on Reddit becomes like, that's the universal norm and anything else is wrong. So I try to counteract that.
Got it. Sure. Okay, last question, and then I promise I'll stop bombarding you. Maybe two. You know what? I lied. Probably two. So okay. First of all, what drew you to Overwatch content? There's a lot of games out there. There's a lot of great games. You've talked about Counter-Strike and other things. What's drawn you personally to create content for Overwatch specifically?
Well, I was very excited for Overwatch when it was announced. I've played pretty much every esport. Like, I played Brood War, StarCraft II, Dota, League of, like, Counter-Strike. I've played them all at a pretty decent level. But Overwatch, of course, being a new game, this is actually a very unique experience for me, because every other game I've ever played in my entire life, I was either way too young, like, I would be 14 and everyone else was 20.
Sure.
Or I came to the party, like, 6 years late. Like, Dota, I was too young, I guess, but like for League of Legends, for Counter-Strike, for StarCraft, even serious StarCraft, I was just way too late. And so Overwatch was the first game I ever played that I've actually started with everyone else from the ground up. And, plus being a new game, I thought, hey, this is a great chance. I've always wanted to have a YouTube channel. I've always wanted to be like, you know, like I said, day nine, et cetera. Yeah. And so I thought, I'll choose this game. And Overwatch is great because my best games are strategy games like Dota and StarCraft. But at the same time, I do enjoy FPS games. I enjoy that fast-paced aspect of it. And Overwatch is a balance. Overwatch is kind of like a balance of all the current big competitive games. It has all their aspects combined.
Awesome. All right, last one, I promise, for real. What are you looking forward to most from Overwatch in 2017?
Well, I think the unanimous answer to that has to be Overwatch League.
Yes, you can stay. You can stay. Yes. So, yeah.
I mean, what's it like? It's like Blizzard is, the way Blizzard has said it, it's like they're that dark figure in the corner that's just like, great, great things are coming. You know, like what, as far as they've said it, it's going to be like this giant thing. So, I mean, obviously, you have to limit your expectations, but it could be so big, and it's going to be such a, I think really the future of the game depends on what it's going to be, because Blizzard has taken it into their hand.
Totally. I am not tapering my expectation. There's a lot of my own personal expectation on Overwatch League, where if it doesn't do well, there will be the show will turn into me crying probably for just an hour and a half every week, just hear John crying about Overwatch League. So awesome. I'm glad you said that. That's a mandatory question we ask of our guests. And if they say anything but Overwatch League, we just cut them off. So,
well, I'm glad I'm still here.
All right. You passed the test, the payload test.
You passed it. Let's jump into the news this week.
This week in Overwatch.
We've got a ton of news this week. We're going to make it brief, though. But before we do want to thank our MVPs, Adam B., J.A. Coral, and Tommy H. Our show is supported by our fans over at patreon.com/payloadpodcast. Head on over there, find out how you can support the show, get in on some sweet sweet events that we've been working on. It helps us bring on new guests and helps, you know, me not have my capture card go out days before the podcast happens and then panic because we have to fix that. So patreon.com/payloadpodcast. All right, Rosh, what do we have going on this year? Something about a rooster, I guess, is what we've got going on.
Yes, on January 24th, we have the Year of the Rooster, which is Overwatch's new event. If you haven't seen it, they actually have the tweet pinned on their Play Overwatch Twitter. I'm sure that they have it posted on their Facebook. I just don't really use Facebook that much, so I'm not sure if it's there. It's just a short little video. You get a glimpse of Mei, and you get a glimpse of D.Va in her suit, and they have these cute new costumes that we can assume are going going to be the skins that are released from there. They haven't really given too much information out on that, just that it's coming out on the 24th, which I want to say that I wasn't even thinking of an event coming up because the winter event just ended. So I did not expect this. Someone in my stream yesterday actually brought it up and I was like, wait, what? I wasn't even thinking of another event happening, but it's already here.
Didn't they just say they were like, oh, we're not going to do that many events, but here's another one. I mean,
I'm excited though.
Yeah, I'm excited. I mean, this is pretty typical of Blizzard to celebrate Chinese New Year. They've done this in all their other properties for the most part. WoW and Heroes has had it for the second year in a row now. And Rosh is laughing at me, I think.
I just noticed what's a dog on stream, and I looked over and I didn't even realize my dog was here, and it just kind of scared.
Your dog is straight up stalking right now. I think he has something to say.
Yeah, but I mean, there's very little details about what exactly it's going to be. I don't know if it's going to be a full event like the Christmas one or something smaller in scale.
Yeah, I think it has to be smaller because I dropped $50 on each platform every time one of these comes out, and I just can't afford another $50.
Drop more money on it.
Yeah, please be a small one. Two skins, maybe
three. Here's a great idea. Okay. When an event drops, don't buy loot boxes. Just don't buy the loot boxes. I know it's crazy.
Why is that a good idea?
Reevaluating your entire life right now, but just don't buy the loot boxes. That's all you got to do.
Where do you sit, Scott?
Where do I sit? The people in my chat will know what I do with my loot boxes. One of the biggest questions I get is, why don't you open your loot boxes? I have like 250 loot boxes, maybe 300 at this point.
So do I.
I like the skins.
Yeah.
But I mean, at this point, it's just like such a meme for me. Like, why don't you open your loot boxes? Plus, it's so cool because I have like one of every, I have every loot box so far, every loot box type. So, you know, imagine a year from now, if I do like a big unboxing with like all the historic, like every loot box for the entire year,
like
imagine
24 hour stream.
Literally my exact thought process is I keep one of each of the loot boxes. Now what I'll do is if a holiday comes out and there's a skin that I want, like the Zenyatta Nutcracker, I'll just go and I'll open up the normal loot boxes so that I can keep the special winter loot boxes, and I'll just buy it with the 3000 coins. I keep mine too. I think I have like 170 just sitting there unopened. That's funny.
I have no loot boxes and I have like 15 credits. I don't know how you do it. That's dedication and that's trolling to the max. Oh,
okay. Okay. Just to point this out, I think this is kind of funny. The two hardcore Overwatch players don't open loot boxes at all.
I actually do, and the casuals are just spending a lot of money. That's so funny.
To be fair, I'm the same way in Hearthstone. I have a ton of packs I haven't opened, and I rock that basic card back or my Tespa card back, but I never rock my legend card back because can't give your opponent any reads on you. You know, if you've got that really nice skin in Overwatch, they're gonna know that you're really good. You know,
That's very competitive of you.
I know. So meme-y. So we've got that going on. I'm going to be in the hole another $100 while Rosh doesn't open any. Jimmy, what do we have going on? We did get a developer update. I guess that's what it's called.
Yeah, they call it a developer update. It's more like a, hey, here's what the PTR is. And this is good probably for people who aren't hardcore Blizzard fans like us, who have been around Blizzard games for a number of years and know what PTRs are for. But Jeff just breaks down exactly what the PTR is for. It's more for bug testing and making sure that patches are good to go live versus the balance changes. But that is a part of PTR, is to get feedback on that. But that's like not necessarily the number one priority. There was talk about incentivizing PTR. They're open to it, but there's the conundrum between splitting up your dev time to develop something for a fraction of your player base versus something that all of your player base will enjoy. And also talk about the hero changes, kind of vague about it. I really liked what they what he said about Sombra, though. What it goes down comes down to is he said players get good, learn Sombra.
Yeah, people aren't playing Sombra. People don't want to play Sombra the way that she should play be played as, and they're complaining that they should she should be nerfed and changed to play the way that they want to play her. When Blizzard is the developer of the game, so I think that they get to say how you should play her. So yeah, I thought that part was funny too.
Yeah. Do you get to
and we're not talking about console PTR because no one cares about console yeah. in the show.
Yeah.
Hey! Hey! Jimmy, that's a timeout. That's a timeout. 5 minutes. You're muted. Oh. Skyline, do you play a lot of Sombra? do you think that Jeff's mostly right on this Sombra thing?
I enjoy playing Sombra. I think that she's pretty much a support hero, so I kind of add her to, because I play pretty much all support heroes, so I kind of include Sombra in that. You know, I would like to see Jeff's secret way of playing Sombra. I'm interested to see that, because I think with these new buffs, I think this should be good.
Yeah.
But right now, I think that she doesn't have, she's too risky for not enough impact.
Yep. I would agree. I think that's right on. Yeah. Yeah. Come on, Jeff. Just kidding. No, you're right, though. The new buffs. So what? The buffs are 1 second to 0.8 seconds on the hack. And what was?
Cooldown reduction on the hack.
Yeah.
12 to 8 seconds. Yep.
Yep. The cooldown on it. So got it. Nice. That'll be good. Blizzard's banning players who are nuking, because people are like legitimately hacking the game over in Korea. And from what I'm hearing, I have a couple of friends who were in Korea. They're being pretty active on getting those bans out now. So good, because that'll break a game in especially one of your most competitive regions. Like that will...
Yeah.
That will deter. I forget who said it on Twitter this week, but they're in Korea for Apex, and they were trying to play in Korea region.
That, yeah, like every other game
is play. It's just too risky to even play because every other game is being nuked. So, yeah.
I wonder if though last time they did like a big wave of bans, they posted, I know Blizzard Korea at least posted like everyone's name that got banned on the forums. Oh, I don't know if you remember that, but I wonder if they'll do that again. It was a while ago. It was like 4 or 5, 6 months ago, but it was really funny.
And I hope that people go to the forums and post about it too, so we can ever have another episode with Wanch Point Gibraltar where we can just read all people's saltiest tears every week. So that's going on, but I think even more importantly and probably most actively this week is everything going on in esports.
Faster than sight. So predictable.
Lots going on in esports this week for Overwatch. Kind of one of the big pieces outside of the actual tournaments is that the Miami Heat actually invested in Team Misfits. So the Heat will mainly assist with merchandising, marketing, and sponsorship sales, but they aren't having a controlling interest. So they still kind of are separate, but, you know, you're getting some of that big, real professional sports money now. They changed up their logo and jerseys to match the Heat style. So overall, pretty cool. I mean, that's now, I know the Clippers, a lot of NBA teams are really investing in some esports organizations. So
Well, I mean, are we surprised? Didn't we talk about the teams that were at BlizzCon talking to Overwatch developers and hanging around the Overwatch? So, I mean, I think we all kind of saw it coming, especially with Overwatch League and how it's going to be funded and all the questions and concerns around the cities and stuff. I think we all kind of knew that it was going to happen, so I'm not really that surprised. I think that it's pretty cool, though, that Overwatch League is, you know, coming up. All these basketball teams and sports teams are picking them up, and who knows, maybe we'll hear about the LA Energy team soon. Who knows? I think it'll be fun. I think that this year will be really good, and it'll be super exciting for esports and Overwatch together.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think I'm not too surprised by the teams getting involved. I'm surprised by how quickly they're getting involved in esports. And I just wanted to mention, just overall, I love that the Heat is helping out Misfits with things that traditionally esports teams, being built from the ground up, struggle with doing well. I feel like merchandising is way more difficult than you would really think it is. I mean, there's all these different people you have to get in touch with for production of your merchandise, making sure it gets shipped on time. And if you're with a not so great third party, you're going to upset your fans. And so someone like the Miami Heat, who knows what they're doing, they sell thousands and thousands of tickets and jerseys and t-shirts and all that stuff. This will be a lot of great expertise for them. Obviously, marketing and sponsorship stuff is also something really good for esports teams coming up.
Right. Skyline, you had said in 2017, you're most looking forward to Overwatch League. So I'm going to assume here that you probably watch this stuff at least semi-closely. What do you think about a Miami Heat investment in Team Misfits?
I think it's really exciting. Really, it's hard to know exactly what to think about it because it's so new. This
right.
is really, like, I think Blizzard right now is just making such a big move that is really going to turn the page for esports. It's either going to be, you know, it's either going to really just go up to the next level, or, you know, there's always the possibility it doesn't work out and it could really hurt the scene as well. But, you know, all these big, you know, all these big sports clubs getting into esports, I think is very exciting because we're going to see, like, I'm interested to see as esports becomes more mainstream and start to see as it kind of moves out of the Twitch.tv mom's basement and goes into, like, the outside world and becomes something that actually becomes, like, a normal, commonplace thing.
Right. Yeah, I think you kind of brought up a good point. It's really easy to get really excited by these acquisitions. And I think for the most part, it's the proper response. When you see more money funneled into esports and you are bringing in more talent and more experience with parts of esports that, let's be honest, some dude with a marketing degree right out of college who really likes video games is now part of channel partnership and distribution, can a lot of times not end up boding very well for the organization and bringing in professional sports teams into that, I think is great. But we just had, it was Reunited, right? Who, am I thinking of the right team? What was the team that just basically had to nix everything and reunited? Perfect. I'm glad I got that. it was, you know, Reunited because Overwatch League was incompatible with Reunited's structure. And they cited that as one of the big reasons as to why now was the time to kind of get out and let their players scramble and find teams and stuff like that.
That's like I said, because I think it is something that exciting. I think it's something exciting, something that can be a really great, amazing, spectacular, positive. But it does, I think that there needs to be that undertone of nervousness that you kind of see because it's not what I would consider natural. So I grew up with all of these competitive games that eventually blossomed into esports, and I saw multiple times the story, StarCraft, Counter-Strike, Dota, of this game. People really like this game. People are passionate. Hey, let's play some fun tournaments. Hey, we can get a lot of teams to play this tournament. Let's do it in real life. Maybe we can get some sponsors. People are watching it. And slowly over the years, it becomes what it is now. With Overwatch, it's very much not like that. It's not what I would consider natural. I think that it would definitely become that after enough years. But right now, the concern is that the game is still not matured. The game is still not there. Like the player base isn't there. The player base isn't necessarily ready. So Blizzard is in a way kind of smothering the competitive scene right now. And you're seeing that with these orgs to say, oh, I can't do it. Like, I have to get out. Like, we can't do it. We can't have a team. It's too expensive. It's too expensive to compete. You see Europe right now is having lots of troubles because all these teams are coming for the Overwatch League. There's all the speculation. And so right now, Blizzard has control. Like, if Blizzard messes this up, or if it gets messed up somehow, it could possibly, I'm not going to be this bad, kill Overwatch, right? But like, it could possibly set Overwatch back much further, like years, or possibly even just make it permanently disable it, just because it's not natural. It's this artificial thing created by Blizzard. But if it works out, then it would work out spectacularly. So that's my take on it.
I think you bring up a really good point here. And when they announced Overwatch League at BlizzCon, it was one of the first things I said is like, while this sounds great from a fan perspective, like as a fan, this is nothing but yes, I'm excited. Consistent games. Give me fantasy leagues for Overwatch. Give me all that stuff. Give me my Crusher 99 jersey. I love the idea that I want a Denver Bronco Overwatch team. Like, that is all really exciting. But I looked into it. I believe League of Legends took 4 years before they fully kind of matured into kind of the modern system that we have now. And even then, it's being tweaked quite a bit. And it was natural. With that naturalness, though, sometimes you have a lot of there's a lot of obstacles that are overcome that are just slowed down. Like, how much do you pay your players when you're just your little own esports organization versus this esports organization or team that's backed by Blizzard, and you're given salary caps and you're given options for insurance for your players. But it number one, if it doesn't translate well, which, you know, Nate Nanzer, who's kind of the head of the Overwatch League, he's a pretty qualified dude. He knows a thing or two about this. So I think they've put the right people in place, and I think that they've done it as best as they could. And if it does find a way to fail, I think we'll study this in esports marketing management. Come on, college major. If you can have sports management, you just get esports management in there. They'll be studying that for years. But I think the cards or the cards are all out on the table right now. Most organizations seem cautiously optimistic. I remember over.gg posted an article. I think it was that. It might have been like PC Gamer or Polygon. Posted an article with some of the presidents or top brass in esports organizations about Overwatch League. And they were all kind of like, we're really excited about it. We're nervous about it because it's kind of unprecedented. We haven't gone through this before, especially nine months into Overwatch being a live game, and we already have a league on it. And the only person who had the guts to call it on this show was Jimmy. And Kevin gave him such crap for it on the show. I can still go back to that. So, I think you're exactly right, though, that sometimes if you try to force something into a game, like sometimes it doesn't get that natural progression doesn't get that natural following and you put the cart before the horse a little bit. The things that we have going for Overwatch, though, that I think are really strong is, number one, I mean, even at the video game award, right? I got eSport of the Year, Multiplayer Game of the Year. It is fifth or sixth most watched game on Twitch, but their tournaments actually are up in like 3 and 4, I believe, is what that looks like. Overwatch porn is all the way up to number 14 on the Pornhub chart. So there goes our child friendly rating for the show. Dang it. Oh, sorry. I know that wasn't right. But I mean, there's a lot of excitement around Overwatch,
there's a lot of
at least.
Content for Overwatch.
Yeah.
This growth is unprecedented in any game before. Yeah. This is the closest game is probably League of Legends, and it didn't reach this until 4 or 5 years. This level of viewership, maybe even, I'd say about 5 years.
Well, I think it was just because everybody was ready for a game to come out like this. Everybody, I don't know, for me personally, I was just waiting. If Overwatch hadn't come out, I don't know what the heck I would be playing right now, because it was kind of just going from game to game casually, not really investing my time into anything. And I think that I'm not the only one out there that felt that way. We were all just waiting for the next big thing. And I think that League of Legends and CSGO and even the Hearthstone and HOTS tournaments kind of set the stage for how well Overwatch is going to do, because all the fans and everybody who like playing these video games and watching these games were just waiting for this to happen. So I think that it lined up perfectly for Overwatch to come in and then sweep all the views and take the charts and lead that way into this 2017 year of what esports is going to be like.
Oh yeah, it was definitely the same way. I was, especially that period between the open beta and the release, mm-hmm. I was like, just literally didn't play any games or anything in between that time.
Yeah.
But it's definitely, I did find it was actually, there's an interesting sentiment in the community, though, where because Overwatch is kind of the first at least successful game that was initially created as an esport. Like, it was marketed as, this is going to be the next big esport. Like, when League of Legends came out, it was just like, this is a fun game. StarCraft, this is a fun game. You know, none of these games were marketed like that. And so there is still even a bit of a sentiment in the community where it's like, oh, well, we're concerned about this being a big esport. You know, I'm really worried about the Twitch numbers. You know, really, it's like, it's just a fun game. You gotta calm down, have fun. If it's a fun game, if you enjoy it, people like it, they'll watch it.
Yep.
And so I think that's what it definitely comes down to in the end.
That's a great point. Moving on, I told you we had a ton of esports stuff to talk about. Rosh and my Overwatch gaming crush has been signed by Cloud9. Gods joins Cloud9. And Kai is no longer on the roster. Actually, he's coaching at Apex Season 2 for Team Envious. Rosh, what's going on with Gods here? So he's with Cloud9 now. How do you feel?
He is. And I think you let everybody know how I feel. I don't think anyone's happy that Gods is with C9 than I am. I love Gods. I love C9. It's going to be an amazing fit. And I think just the personalities from, I haven't met Gods. I just know him on Twitter, but I have met Mendo and Rib and, you know, the rest of the team. And it's just the personalities seem like they're going to go together so well that I think it's going to be an amazing fit. And strategically speaking, from the team itself, Gods is going to be a great fit with Surefire and Mendo, just because Surefire and Mendo are going to be able to frag their hearts out. They're going to be able to go crazy with Gods on this team. It's going to be insane. This is such a stacked team, and I'm so excited to watch C9 in Apex. And not only am I watching C9 with Gods, but we get to watch them for Season 2, like with Mani and Doa and all of this great production. I'm so excited to watch these games for this Season 2 that I cannot wait.
Yeah, Cloud9 plays for the first time in about 6 hours. If you want to stay up with me, we'll hang out in Discord and we'll watch Apex at 2 in the morning. How do you feel about Gods going over to C9 Skyline? That was hard to say. That's a tongue twister. C9 Skyline.
I think it's strong. I think that if you were to look at it from a technical aspect, I think it is an upgrade. But I kind of reserve, you know, my judgment or my opinion in regards to the shuffling of players, because right now, you know, these teams are just in constantly being shuffled all the time. So it's hard. It's hard to say like, oh, well, this, you know, this week, let's talk about them. Oh, this week, the team's completely different. And then the next week after that, the team's completely different. So I always kind of, I've been intentionally sort of passive in regards to me talking about that aspect of the game right now, just because teams are improving at such a rapid rate and the rosters are changing so quickly that it's very volatile.
It is a lot. It is a lot of changes. And it's, I remember I was looking at, I think, the Misfits roster from like 2 months ago, and it was just drastically different than it is today. And I mean, even Cloud9, we've seen all that happened. And then honestly, once Overwatch League starts getting some traction, it'll probably change a bunch again, unless we're under the assumption that all this shuffling is in preparation for Overwatch League. Do you have an opinion on which you think it is? Do you think people are just kind of jumping around right now because it's all not going to matter soon? Or do you think that teams are really trying to prepare, and even though they're not being public with it, in private they know that they're getting their rosters ready for Overwatch League?
I think that that's part of it, because they know that they have, you know, the clock is ticking as far as that goes. These organizations want to be going into it with as strong of a roster as possible. So if you don't do well in one tournament, you know, right now in Counter-Strike, at least let's say recently in Counter-Strike history, I'll just use that as one example, or StarCraft as a team, or like League of Legends history. If you if your team fails, doesn't do very well in a tournament, you say, oh, well, let's practice and do the next one. Oh, let's practice and do the next one. Let's project 6 months from now. In Overwatch right now, if you say, let's project our team 6 months from now, forget it. That's not
That's
a thing.
True. That's
you
a
can't
good point.
Do that. So, you know, these orgs, I don't want to say panicking, but that's probably getting kind of, it's probably getting kind of close to that point where it's like, if their team doesn't do well in a tournament, well, how many tournaments do we really have left to deal with this? So better change it up, better shuffle it all around. Let's see what happens next tournament. And so that's why you're seeing all this shuffling. Plus just the actual players. It's such a new game. This isn't a StarCraft where you have Bisou, who has been playing it since he was a child and now he's an adult. You know, we have no master. There are no good Overwatch players right now from a technical point of view. If we look back, if we go 5 years from now, we'll be like, oh, well, all these players are very bad. So just these players are improving at such a rapid rate. These teams are improving, strategies are improving, that this tournament, this team A might be really good, and the next tournament, team A might have the same roster, and now they're bad. So that's what it is.
The thing also on the roster situation is that because Overwatch League isn't here, there's no governing body forcing these teams to stay together. And that's a thing that happens in League, because you're signed up on this contract with the LCS. You're required to keep your team together. I think there's some leeway on if someone leaves or something like that. But I mean, it's the same way now in the Heroes League, which is coming up really soon, is there's roster locks now. And I'm assuming that'll be a thing for Overwatch League. It'll be very similar to the traditional sports model, where there's this time period before playoffs where you can do trades and stuff like that, if that's going to be a thing. And then there's a roster lock at a certain point in the season, deep in the season. And we'll probably see that happen. And like Skyman was saying, though, these teams want to be going into Overwatch League as strong as possible. And they're just trying to figure out what configuration is going to work. And that's why you're seeing so much movement.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that's why they haven't come out with any kind of regulation or restriction on that, because Blizzard knows with Overwatch League, I'm sure they've already decided that that's exactly what they're going to do, which is why, like Skyline and Jamie have now said, you're seeing all of these moves, because like we've been saying for how many shows now, everything with Overwatch has happened so fast. Even at getting Game of the Year, it just was crazy how fast everything is moving with Overwatch, that I think you kind of have to expect all of these team swaps. And I think we said this last week or the week before, that you kind of had to expect this to go along with the teams. You had to expect a lot of switch ups, because that's exactly what needs to happen. Things need to be locked down before Overwatch League. And I think Blizzard knows that, and the teams know that. So I still feel like you're going to expect quite a few team changes still coming before Overwatch League releases.
We still have a whole segment to talk about. So we're gonna table this one, but I'm really excited. We'll see how much of an upgrade that is for Cloud9 here shortly, because they're playing against Conbox Spirit, I believe. Yep. Here in just a little bit. So we will get to see just how great they're gelling off the bat. And yeah, let's go on. Too Easy is no longer with FaZe Clan. We don't have any concrete details, at least that I've seen yet. But surprising, I think a pretty big hit from a skill level for FaZe. Too Easy and Shadowburn have just kind of been kind of the two who really stand out to me, at least on that roster, a lowly surf of esports spectating. There it is. That's kind of interesting. Winter Premiere week 2 still going on, and we're getting into group phases, all that stuff. What we really wanted to do is take a few minutes to talk about Apex Season 2, because that is kind of where I feel a lot of the esports commotion is going on right now in Overwatch. I'm going to be honest, the Winter Premiere stuff, I honestly lost interest. Is that bad to say?
That's okay. I mean, it's going on right now. And I wanted to briefly mention that if after the show, go ahead and watch that, because they're closing out the end of round robin of the six teams there. And we have Team Liquid and Luminosity actually tied for the fourth spot right now. So I'm curious how that plays out if they end up tied after they're both playing Liquid's playing Immortals, and then Luminosity is also playing Immortals. So the fate of their existence in this group in the playoffs is going to be decided by Immortals, apparently.
Interesting.
Which will be interesting. Yeah.
Yeah. It's been great. Like it's been good Overwatch. The quality of the casting and everything has been really solid. But when we saw all those teams decline invites or drop out last minute, I kind of was like, ooh, I'm not as invested. Yeah, Team Liquid, great. FaZe was there, you know, sure. I'm really excited to see those teams, but it's not like the Apex where you just have so many good Eastern teams and so many good Western teams going head-to-head, seeing the clash of those different play styles and different metas and just different teams who don't get to see a lot. And then just having it be a LAN is also so cool. LANs are so fun for me for Overwatch. And so seeing that is pretty great. The big thing I wanted to highlight from Apex Season 2, though, is Envious versus MVP Infinity. And this was a heck of a series. It was, in my opinion, one of the most interesting series. It went 3-2. Envious overtakes MVP Infinity. But going into it, I mean, Envious is largely considered the best team in Overwatch right now. And I don't think people really expected MVP Infinity to show up, let alone like they did. And so you need to go back and watch it, twitch.tv/NGE Global, and look from the cast from Tuesday. They do a really good job at splitting it up into highlights. Rosh, what did you think of this series? Or do you still have screaming kids?
No, I think he's calmed down a little bit. Basically, great. Exactly what you said. I don't think anybody expected it to be such a good game. Who would have expected MVP to come in like they did and swing how they did at Envious? I think it'll be really interesting to see how Envious goes forward with new coaching, like we were talking about earlier. And I don't know if that'll improve or if it'll make these games these sleeper games that you weren't really expecting to be as good as they are, if they're just going to go back to that or if it's going to shake it up and that we're going to see more really good games from them. I kind of hope we see more games from them because I don't know about you guys, but seeing a stomp on a game like Korea versus America at Overwatch Worlds at BlizzCon, it's not really that fun to watch. So I kind of hope we see close games, but for Envious' sake, I hope that we don't see. It's just a mix. It was a good game, though. It was really fun to watch. Sure. Like I said, I don't think anybody expected MVP to show up like they did, so it was really cool.
Yeah. Skellen, have you been able to kind of stay up to date with Apex this past week?
Yeah, I've been watching it. Unfortunately, I haven't been watching all the games that I've been wanting to, but I've been watching the important matches. I watched the Envious versus MVP, and it was a pretty good match. I thought MVP actually had it going into that last match, but Envious showed just their experience, and they really just had more stamina. Yeah. Because especially with that last match, MVP just Mickey ate the Zarya ultimate, and you could just feel they're like, okay,
just they deflated.
They just crushed. After that, it was over. There was nothing else after that, as far as any offense was concerned. And then, of course, Envious rolled through after that. But I think that was really all it was.
Yeah,
I think that Envious is a good team, but I won't be shocked to see other games that are this close and maybe not even in their favor, just because it's been such a long time. They're kind of, from what I've heard, they aren't super in practice right now. They had some time off. And so, all these teams, these are the biggest Overwatch teams in the world, and they've had some time to improve or to get worse. It goes both ways. And right. So we're going to see a lot of differing results than maybe we would have seen a month ago.
The way I've been kind of watching it and looking at it, the people who I'm really watching is I really want to see an Envious versus Luxury Watch Blue. Who do you think is the best team at Apex right now? Maybe give your best two. Give me your two favorites who you want to see head to head at the end of it all.
The best team. I mean, I just kind of gave a reason why I have no clue what the best teams are, because we haven't seen a lot yet. What we have seen has been a little, doesn't really say too much. Like we saw Envious. In the match in the series we were talking about earlier, that series did not show the best Envious we've seen compared to the other teams. So who's the best right now? I don't know. If you want to go by like the correct option according to the stats, the previous performance, then I would agree with you that Envious is looking obviously best right now as far as the West goes. Luxury Watch does look good. I haven't seen as much Eastern play as I have wanted to see. So
right, yeah, we haven't seen a lot from Luxury Watch. And last time we saw them, I think it was Apex Season 1. It was kind of LW Purple. It was a combination of red and blue. They threw together at the last second, and I was really excited to see Pine. I don't think we saw Flower. Now, who we do now, who's the youngest player on their team, and at least by other players, seems to be widely regarded as the best on that team overall, the star, if you will, or the big playmaker on the team. So I think it's really interesting to see what we get from the rest of this. It is early. We've only seen this East-West clash really once before, maybe twice, kind of, if you want to try to make the World Cup thing a thing. But even then, you didn't really have rosters. Yeah. And, you just have that. You have Team USA rushing out Bastion and yeah. Torbjorn's and it's... It's a very different game now than we're used to seeing. So make sure to be tuning into Apex Season 2. But we do want to get into our strategies segment here before we close it all out. And Skyline, you did an amazing video a little while back about map awareness and aiming. Was it just called aiming and map awareness? Was that?
It was called crosshair placement.
Crosshair placement. Thank you. And so we wanted to take a little time and talk a little bit more about map awareness in something that we're just going to call map mastery. And it's about being a better Overwatch player as far as the maps go. So in the end, knowing the maps is very important. Rosh, you said when we were discussing this in Slack the week before that I can't remember if it was you say it to other people or someone said it to you, but don't sweat the games until you've learned the maps.
Yeah.
Is something. Yeah.
Yeah. It's basically anytime someone comes into my stream and they're like, hey, Rosh, you know, I just got Overwatch. Do you have any tips of how to play well? That's normally the first thing that I typically say is don't sweat anything about the game. Don't sweat learning the ults. Don't sweat learning the characters. Focus on learning the maps because there are different map modes, all of the different maps, all of just everything. It all switches depending on the map. So really, my biggest tip is just learning the maps itself. Really, as soon as you get the vibe of the map and, you know, flanking routes and different ways that you can attack and take an advantage on the team, that's when you start really getting into the game and you're really able to start focusing on improving your skill set after that. So that's definitely my biggest thing. And it's also one of the easiest things to learn. You just have to play the game and then you'll pick up on the map and you'll become familiar with it. So it's the biggest and easiest way that you can improve your gameplay. Just learning the map and becoming familiar with it.
I would say something too is I don't disagree, but one thing I would add is you do want to go in being cognizant of it, right? Like for someone like you, Rosh, or Skyline, you guys are probably just so used to taking games like this at a competitive level that it's pretty easy to flip that switch into, okay, what am I looking for in learning this map? For somebody like me, who I've had my competitive Halo 2 days, right? I remember that I could walk around blindfolded on those maps and, you know, be in a really good spot and know where I am. I've honestly forgotten how to do that. I'm like, how did 17-year-old John figure out this map? And at the same time, anytime I'm backing up and turning around, I'm always getting clipped on corners and other things. There's too many polygons in games these days. That's what it is. We need to simplify so I don't get stuck on things. Skyline, is there anything, if you had to kind of break it down into, you know, okay, this is my first time on Oasis. I need to start learning this map. I've had a few run-throughs, so I'm relatively familiar with the layout. Is there something that you think people should go to next from there to kind of keep that awareness high?
Yeah, so whenever you're learning a new map, or I mean, you can kind of push this off to any topic, but we'll keep it with maps. If you want to learn a new map, basically, you want to just pick a spot, essentially. Say, hey, I like that spot. That looks cool. Or if you're a flanker, say, hey, I like that flanking route. It looks cool. I just do it. Over and over and over again. I mean, obviously, if you're forced to do something else, do that. But basically focus. Let's say you're playing Anna. You say, hey, I'm going to stand here. I'm just going to stand here. That's what I'm going to do. That's what I'm going to do on this map. Do that 3 or 4 times. And suddenly you're a master of that spot. You know everything. You know what's going on, what the weakness of the spot is, what the strength of that spot is. And say, okay, that's cool. I'm bored of the spot. Let's try a different spot. So you go try a different spot. And then after you cycle through that 3 or 4 times, now you suddenly, because it's symmetrical, right? So now you know every spot on the map very intimately. You know, hey, not only do you know it for yourself, but now you know it for your opponents, because you know what the strength and weaknesses that they have at that particular spot are. And you can say, oh, well, you know, that spot that I did before, that was really good when this happened, or it was really bad when this other thing happened. So I know where to stand when. If you something I find players do often is they won't focus like that. They'll just say, okay, I'm going to just take it all on. And they'll actually have too much of an expectation for themselves. They will go to the map and they'll say, okay, well, I'm going to figure out, this is a big thing. There'll be like callouts for Oasis, you know, those maps of the callouts. Like, I'm going to figure out all the callouts, I'm going to figure out all the places. I'm going to memorize it all. We're going to do it all. And the result of that is you just never actually wind up learning anything because you're always too stretched out. And the key thing is you want to limit your variables, right? If you're standing in the same place all the time, you know, you have one perspective that you can actually adjust your play from. But if you're constantly switching around the map, you'll never be able to actually orient yourself. So the main thing that I would tell anyone who wants to learn a new map is just focus on one area at a time and don't worry about, don't bite off more than you can chew. Just take one area at a time and that's it.
So kind of sequencing, I used to have to do a lot of text memorization and things like that. And something you would do is you wouldn't go, I need to memorize this paragraph. You just read the whole paragraph over and over and over again. That's not a very good way to learn it. You may eventually learn it, but it's a lot easier to go maybe two sentences at a time, memorize those two sentences, then the next two, then the next two, and then the first four, and then the last four, and then eventually putting it all together, right? And not necessarily that it's not linear like text is, but it is breaking it up into chunks and putting it together rather than overwhelming yourself with too much information at once that you're forgetting kind of what you just did or focused on too many things. Jumping up a little bit, we already talked about some of the simple mistakes people make when attempting to master maps. Skyline says, taking on too much at once. Is there anything else that you think is kind of a mistake that people can make when they're trying to master these maps? Jimmy?
Yeah.
Okay.
Sorry. It's okay. No, but I mean, I want to reiterate what you guys said, but basically Day 9 said the same thing in a lot of his strategy videos of focusing on one thing per game and improving upon that is going to be so much more valuable than trying to think of, oh, I need to aim right, I need to move properly, I need to do all these things, I need to focus on my ult control, blah, 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 all this stuff. That can be overwhelming, and you're just not going to improve better at that point. But focusing on getting better at the map, just learning where locations are. I mean, the best thing I think you can do is go into a custom game and just walk around very casually, just see where everything is on the map.
Especially at the beginning.
And you'll understand it. Yeah. And like Rosh was saying last week, one of the things she did when the new map came out a week or two ago, was there's Blizzard always does this and puts a brawl up for that, is load up that brawl and play for hours and hours and hours just in a very casual environment and learn the map that way. And I think that's a good way to really up your knowledge of all these maps that are going to be coming into the game. I mean, there's just so much to absorb that breaking it down will help you in the long run.
Totally. Okay. Okay, so there we go. We got some more. Rosh, anything to add to those kind of common mistakes that you can think of?
No, I mean, I had written down kind of, it's weird because you guys are talking about focusing on one thing, but I actually had it written down and going a little differently as while you're learning these maps, yes, focusing and getting to learn that spot and the advantages and disadvantages of that spot does happen, but just don't let yourself get into the habit of tunnel visioning. Let that be a learning habit and know that you're doing that, but constantly be aware that, yes, I'm staying in this spot, but don't let myself get in a habit of actually doing this when I start to get past this and I learn the map and I start becoming aware. Don't get in the habit of just always being in that spot. Once you learn other spots, utilize those spots as well, because when you start tunnel visioning, so many times I'll be in a game where the entire team is just tunnel visioning the alley and there's a flanking route or a second alley to get into the point. And then, for example, a Roadhog comes through and gets a pick and, you know, at high elo, that's a disaster. It's so hard to get past that. So, yes, utilize all these tips, but I think my next tip would be don't get so comfortable in that way while you're learning everything that that becomes a habit and you become doing that every single game, even when you are aware of the map. Evolve and take into consideration all of the others as well. Don't always do that.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. I definitely think, you know, it's a step. It's at a process. It's knowing when you're at step one and you're tunnel visioning and when you're at step five where, okay, I'm not still in step one and I have to get out of that comfort zone a little bit and start looking more and start playing the game and not playing the map.
Necessarily. Yeah, exactly.
if I'm understanding you correct.
Yes.
That's what I took away. I'm taking notes right now because, you know me, bad. So any particular heroes that you think are especially good for learning new maps? Like my natural answer is the hero you're most comfortable with, because to Skyline's point, eliminate as many variables as possible, especially ones outside of what you're focusing on. If you're a really good 76 and a really crappy Sombra and you want to start learning Oasis and you're going to learn it on Sombra, like you may not get as much out of that. Skyline, what do you think? Are there any other kind of thoughts around hero choice when doing that?
Yeah, I agree that probably the best hero is your best hero. But if I were to actually say, like, if you were to be equally skilled at all heroes, now were to really pick out a hero that would be best to learn maps, it would be the less mobile heroes. So if you were to learn a map on, say, Pharah, that'd be a bit awkward because Pharah is very strange. She moves strangely compared to other characters. She's always in the air. And you can't just stay in one place. Something like being on a Mercy would be a little bit difficult to learn a map on. I think Mercy is very good to learn the game with, but if you already know the game, you want to learn a map, Mercy is maybe not the best because you're always forced to
your routes are other people's routes.
Pinballing around, you don't have the luxury of actually deciding where to go. Something like an Anna where you can just sit back, something like even a Widowmaker, you know, heroes that can kind of stand back and kind of make their own space. Reinhardt even is are good heroes.
Yeah, a little bit more support-y, where your job is a lot of times your positioning and where you are positioning yourself rather than shooting other people the whole time, or, you know, trying to contest a point.
Or if you're like a Tracer or something where you always have to keep zipping around, that'd be difficult as well.
I'll never learn Tracer, by the way. Sidebar for a second. I just can't do it. All right. Fair enough. So far what we've got is kind of break it down, compartmentalize it, you know, standard memorization techniques kind of when it comes to breaking it down and then building it back up, choosing heroes that you're comfortable with. If you're comfortable with many, choosing ones that are a little bit more, not necessarily less mobile, but more map reliant in their positioning and where they are going and what you are supposed to perceive with that hero. So is that it? Is that all we need to know to be a map master, or are there some more steps involved, Skyline?
I think that those are the steps, you will. Those are the physical steps. But as far as the mentality goes, you always have to be thinking of maps in terms of the angles and the entrances. Like when you're standing in a place, think of all of the places the enemies can be standing. So where can they come from? When you're standing in a spot, you don't want it to just be this weird thought in your head of just this mush or whatever. You want to organize and structure it. Say, okay, where can I be flanked from? There and there. Who can I shoot from a distance? Who can shoot me from a distance? And if you compartmentalize it like that, you'll be sure that you're actually learning something instead of, I know. Well, what is it? Oh, you know, I just know. I can't explain it, but I know, you know, like that sort of thing.
Yeah, I think I think you touched quite a bit on this with with the, like, even like crosshair placement, right? Is, you know, that, you know, Numbani, you know, you're going to turn around the corner, but doesn't mean that you just put your crosshair right smack dab in the middle. You know, you put it head height, you put it to where those positions are. And that's another way to kind of validate your understanding of the map. It's not just physically the layout of the map, but also how other heroes utilize that map and how the enemy will utilize that. The second point on Volskaya Industries is always one for me to where it always surprised me how few people use, at least at like, you know, diamond platinum ranking where I'm hanging out at, how few people use that right hand side where like Farah can just fly right mm-hmm. over. And then like they're never paying attention to that. They'll set up a Bastion there or a Torbjorn there. That's right. Bastion and Torbjorn that we're seeing. And, you know, it's kind of knowing, you know, those routes too, and knowing, hey, somebody can come from here. How do I keep my eye on that? And what heroes can make it on that route, I think, is another kind of good thing to think about. Jimmy, what are your thoughts? Anything you want to add to this?
Yeah, just a little bit. I mean, you kind of have to keep in the back of your mind, especially as you're climbing ranks, you're going to see a lot more advanced stuff happening. I mean, Skyline pointed out on Dorado, there's that little jump point that there's a little point to the A spot where both Farah and Genji can kind of just jump into really easily and catch you off guard. So you kind of want to have a little spotter for that, and got to watch that video because he did a really good job of breaking down how to spot that out. Talk to your team about what's going on. And also that you don't necessarily have to communicate necessarily to know what's going on. You just have to listen for those audio mm-hmm. cues. And I really liked how you broke that down, and audio is so important in this game because all the ults, you hear them coming, you know that something is happening. So audio is another thing that you can really use to help learn the map as well, and where fights are going to break out. I mean, generally fights break out at the same spot for every map. So keep an eye on that, and just keep that internal.
I think you made a comment, Skyline. You're like, hear everything in this game. The gunshots are really loud. And I was like, yeah, no, they definitely are. If you aren't listening to the game, that's something that you need to do. Lower your music if you can't get past it. I've seen people who don't, and I've played with people who don't pay attention to the audio. And as you're learning the map, that's something that's huge too, especially if you don't, if there's so much going on in your head that you can't pay attention to flanking route A, B, and C, and you can only really devote your attention to B and C, at least listen for point A so you can hear the Roadhog, or you can hear the Genji shift, or you can hear a Farah shift into the air, because those all make audio cues. They all make cues to let you know that's happening. And if you just have that at the back of your head, you don't even have to turn your camera. You can get away with just listening and knowing what's going on behind you. So many times I've seen wipes and deaths because, you know, and Ana just wasn't listening to the Roadhog flanking on the left or anything like that. It makes a massive difference. So if that's not something that you're doing with your map awareness, then try and push that. It'll just help your gameplay. It'll change it dramatically.
Yeah.
I just I posted a video today titled "Be a Better Player Through Sound." So go more views, please. Go check it out.
Yeah. There's We've been kind of talking about this a little bit. A lot of this stuff, I feel bad for Skyline sometimes because he's made videos on a lot of these topics that we've talked about. But a lot of people who listen to audio podcasts don't get to spend a lot of time on YouTube. And you should, number one, go to Skyline's YouTube. It'll be in the show notes and everything. Go there and watch those videos, because audio podcasts for Overwatch are kind of difficult, especially strategy, because how much can you, you know, take away from a very visual game if you're getting a lot of audio. But we wanted to kind of, you know, massage those strategy segments as much as we can and hopefully help people, even when you're working on your commute, be able to get a little bit more out of your Overwatch play. So At the end of it, I want to take a minute. We got an email that I wanted to address, then we'll get out of here real quick and be done. So this is from Aid Morrow, and I'm going to get into it. Was a little bit of a long email. I'm going to shorten it a little bit. Aid Morrow says, first of all, guys and Rosh, I love the podcast. I've been listening since episode 10. Can't thank you enough for the work that goes into producing the podcast. Side note, Skyline has helped me climb from last season of 2,400 to about 2,800, which I can't thank him enough for. His best hero is, Aid Morrow's best hero is Zenyatta, according to online statistics sites like OverSumo or Overbuff, with a 60% win rate. However, because Zenyatta isn't meta, he'll often get flamed for picking the hero. When asked to switch, he'll try to be a better team player and switch to what people are asking him to switch to, but is stuck bouncing around between 2,600 to 2,800. Skyline, do you think he should be changing off of Zenyatta and doing that, or do you think that it's okay for him to realize that's his best hero and stay there on that, even when the team may not like that overall?
Yeah, Zenyatta is probably one of the most versatile heroes in the game. if he's like locking in Zenyatta, if he's instant locking Zenyatta, and someone's saying, oh, you know, pick Lucio, pick Anna, no one's going to tell him to pick Mercy, but you know, one of those other two heroes, just play Zenyatta. Don't worry about the meta in that regard. I mean, if you have four support players and they all locked in support, okay, maybe you can be the bigger man and switch off. Yeah, you might want to check their hours and, you know, see if you're superior in that right way, but that's but still, like, just you can switch off if there's that. But if someone's saying, like, or let's just broaden it to anything, right? If someone's saying, oh, you know, McCree's bad right now, Soldier's better, you should play Soldier. Like, no, don't do that. You play the hero you're best at. And that is really one of the keys to climbing. Don't worry about the difference between picking Zenyatta versus Lucio until you're way, way higher. Or like, that's like going from the top 1% to the top 0.5% thing you should be worrying about your actual hero pool. Until then, I mean, you can play Bastion up to GM. It doesn't matter. Just pick your best hero.
I'm going to play Bastion to GM. There it is.
Great.
Skyline.
We're
going to
have, so many. I was going to do ranked after this, but there are going to be so many Torbs and Bastions. And
right.
Okay. Well, I kind of feel the same way on this. This mainly how I feel about it. Your best character, you're going to do the best on it, even if it's not meta. Up to a certain point, which is a very, very, very high point, you're going to have more of a percentage of winning. You're going to have more of a chance to win the game playing your best character, even if it is out of meta. Unless it's Bastion, but whatever, I guess that John's just going to play Bastion.
Whatever. Okay. Listen here, Mercy main.
thank you, because that literally segues into my next point. I am a Mercy main, so if this problem happens to anybody, it happens to me. I would cry if people said, Rosh, play Mercy. You have 350 hours on Mercy. We would love for you to play Mercy. She's the best. Here, play Mercy instead of Lucio, Zenyatta, or Ana. I'd love for that to happen. Last season, that exact thing happened to me, where... even though Mercy was a bit more into the meta because it wasn't quite the four take meta that it is today, people would still flame me for picking Mercy on, say, defending a map. And with how well I play the character and how that character is for me, I can make it better and I can make it more worthwhile to play that Mercy pick, even though my team is not happy about it, better than I could, say, playing a Zenyatta. Just because I have more hours, I have more practice, and my confidence is on Mercy, whereas on Zenyatta, I'm going to second-guess my plays. I might give up a kill. I might not ult because I'm worried about not being good enough. I might be stressed because of the playing Mercy. I do get it, because sometimes you get in a ranked, and if all five other people on your team are BMing you and flaming you because you want to play this character, and then say you stick with the character you want to play, and then a Genji ults and gets you, they're immediately going to come at you with, see, we told you you shouldn't have played this character, you should have done this, we could have won the game. They're going to try and put that on you. All you have to do, my best piece of advice for that, is just ignore it. It's a video game. The ranked match is going to end. They're relatively fast unless you get into a wonderful King of the Hill, which we all know I love so much. But it will end. You get to move on. Unless you're at the top 0.5%, chances are you're not going to see those people again. So just move on. Don't let it shake your confidence. Keep playing your Zenyatta. Try and explain why it is. If they still don't agree, do it anyway. Depending on the vibe, maybe switch if they're like really, oh, I'm going to play Torb if you don't switch. You could be the nice guy. You could be the bigger guy. But more times than not, it's just way better to play the character that you feel you could do your best at.
Yeah. Bottom line is, have fun playing Zenyatta. Yeah,
and Zenyatta's a good hero anyway. I don't know why anyone
yeah, he really is.
The story I like to say, whenever anyone talks about that, is in season one, I played a hero all the way up to about rank 82, you know, which is pretty far into the ladder, about top 350, about top 200 or so. And that hero, everyone hated that hero. They said, Sky, you're the worst. I hate you. Oh, no, I'm queued up with Skyland again. He's playing that hero. He's such a troll. He always picks Anna. That hero is so bad. And now Anna's like the most OP thing ever. So, you know, it's completely random. And if you think about it, if you're trying to climb, the people you're playing with right now are probably not the best people to give you advice on how to get where you're going, because they're stuck there for a reason, because they don't understand.
Snap. It. True talk. I like
it. So don't take advice from your teammates in that way.
Yeah. I think the only thing that I would add to this one is, if you can, try to go in even like a dual queue, right? Just to have somebody else with you, like a friend, if that's ever possible. It'll make it a little bit easier to explain that. You can have that person vouch, you can do that stuff. If that's not an option, same rule applies. Play what you want to play. I'm assuming you're in competitive, you're playing it because you want to win and to get better. And that does come with being a team player, right? You get six people, maybe all solo, to come together and play well. And sometimes that means if you have four supports, sometimes that means somebody doesn't get to play their most comfortable hero. Sometimes that means you're going to have to be the one to step off and stuff. And sometimes that pettiness can get in the way of a team winning. But I would say that that's a very small fraction of the time. And usually if you're, you know, hitting roughly a decent mix of heroes, you're going to do well. So I think that's it, but we've got to get out of here. We've gone way long.
Time is money, friends, and we're almost flat broke.
All right, we got to get out of here. Skyline, thank you so much for being here. I want to get all the stuff from you for a second so our listeners can follow you on Twitter and YouTube and all that. But before we do, Jimmy, what's going on Patreon land real quick?
Well, first of all, we always thank our MVPs, Adam B, J.A., Coral, and Tommy H. Thank you all so very much for supporting the show and being our MVPs. We greatly appreciate that. Anyone else, we love you too, but if you really like the show and want to show your support, head on over to patreon.com/payloadpodcast and see everything that we are doing over there, all the tier rewards as well, and we're still very close to that $200 merch store. Help us make that a reality so you can buy shirts with our logo on it.
Nice. Rosh, what about iTunes land?
Yeah, iTunes land. 5-star review help us immensely on a week-to-week basis. So huge shout out from good old Canada. We have Slyjax who left us a review. And from the better US of A, we have Kalab P who left us a 5-star review. So thank you so much. If you haven't left a review and would like to support the podcast in an amazing, incredibly easy way, you can find us on iTunes, Stitcher, Podcast Addict, and Google Podcasts.
Boom. Awesome. Thank you, Rash. All right. That's it. That's going to do us for the show. But before we get out of here, Skyline, where can people find you? Any closing thoughts? Twitch chat wants to see a dab. So any of that stuff that you want to get out of the way here before we close out of the way, that would be great.
On YouTube, you can just Google Skyline. I actually appear above the Nissan Skyline car now. So that works.
Feels good.
Or you can Google Skyline Overwatch. On Twitter, it's Skyline _OW. Same thing with Twitch. Same thing everywhere. I also have a Discord. It's a pretty cool community if you want to get help with Overwatch and all that good stuff.
Awesome. All right. Well, normally we do kind of elongated shout outs, but you've got everything where you can find Rosh, Jimmy, and myself throughout the week. Any quick things you two want to shout out, Jimmy?
I'm really excited for all the esports stuff coming up. There's just so much content, and it kind of sucks that I'm also really heavily invested in Heroes of the Storm as well. So, because I can't watch everything, having a day job and all that. I wish I could just quit and just watch esports all day. That's the dream. But yeah, check out all the content. Check me out on Twitter. I'm always posting there all the stuff that I'm doing. And thank you for the support on the payload.
Nice. And Rosh.
Shout outs. You know, you guys, the Twitter and Twitch community is crazy. So you guys are literally what make me do what I do every single day. And that is stream solo queue support for some reason. I enjoy doing it. And that reason is because of you guys. So just massive shout out to you guys who leave us reviews, who follow on Twitter, who check out the podcast, who get great hosts like Skyline in here. If we didn't have a follow, you guys make us want to do this every single week. So massive shout out to you guys. Like John said, you know where to find us all on Twitter and Twitch and all that good stuff. So just massive shout out to you guys. You're the reason we do what we do.
Awesome. Well, let's go ahead and get out of here. Skyline, again, thank you so much for being here. You literally raised the Overwatch IQ of the room by at least 25 points. So I appreciate it so much for being on the show with us this week and taking the extra time to come in on a Thursday night and do this. So thank you so much. Let's get out of here. So thank you for tuning in to episode 53 of The Payload. You can find more great Overwatch stuff throughout the week at overwatch.blizzpro.com. The show records live every Thursday at 7 p.m. Pacific at twitch.tv/blizzpro. And we're on Twitter at Payload Podcast. The Payload is primarily supported by you, our fans. Join the Payload family and find out how you can support at patreon.com/payloadpodcast. And we love your emails. We got to read one on the show this week. Send us your questions and comments to thepayload@blizzpro.com. We love your 5-star iTunes reviews. Take a second, leave a 5-star review, and we'll mispronounce your name on the next show. And of course, a special thanks to Jake Butno for our music. This has been episode number 53. We'll see you guys next week. Bye, guys.